This episode of UK Low Carb Podcast is sponsored by Deliciously Guilt-Free. Enjoy the show.
There was one occurrence when I actually had to call myself an ambulance, and this was when...
What? Kind of,
yeah, this... I was on a train on the way...
Not from just holding in a fart.
Oh, right. I just thought, how much did that fart cost the NHS that you didn't go for 3 hours and then you had to call an ambulance? And also, was that your excuse to get out for a fart? Like... Oh, Amy, I'm going to have to call an ambulance. I'm going to have to go. Then you get in the ambulance. Pull my finger.
What I have learned over the past 2 years has been magnificent. You know, it's completely changed my life.
And so you're not going to die if you don't eat carbohydrates, but you will die if you don't eat fat and protein.
The energy I have, the life I have that has changed so amazingly in a few years, proves to me that what I'm eating is only doing me good.
You know what? I'd love to meet them because they changed my life, basically.
So I've lost now. I'm just I'm about 3 pounds off losing 5 stone.
Hello and welcome to UK Low Carb. This is your podcast, the podcast where we share the real life stories and experiences of people like you and me, people who follow the low carb or keto diet. So join me, Dan Grief, and my co-host each Friday to hear their story. And if you'd like to get involved, then please email me, dan@uklowcarb.com, or join our growing Facebook group, UK Low Carb. And finally, please rate and review this podcast on Apple Podcasts so that we can get the message out about the amazing benefits of the low-carb and keto lifestyle. Now, this podcast is sponsored by my business, Deliciously Guilt-Free. Just use the code PODCAST and you can have 20% off your order. On with the show! Hi all, how was your fast last week? Dan here for another episode of UK Low Carb, and I know that many of you have been fasting alongside us in the Wolfpack, and I know this because either you've sent us messages through Facebook on the page UK Low Carb, or you sent me private messages, which have meant a lot to me. So yeah, I just hope you had a great experience. I'll be actually going to be uploading the conversations of the fast every single Tuesday for the next few weeks, for the 48 hours, et cetera, et cetera. So I've already done the 24-hour one. That's on there now. Just so you can be part of those Zoom calls we had each evening. And you can share the experience that we went through. I personally fasted for 2 days. And I have a plan now to fast every Monday and Tuesday from now on in, because I think it's going to really work for me. Whereas I think the longer fasts mean that my brain goes a bit mad afterwards. Whereas it doesn't happen when I do a shorter fast of 2 days. So that's what I'm going to start. And then I'll do a longer fast again in the summer. Right, before we get into today's show, I just want to share with you a quick review. I'm getting through these at the moment. And just by the way, please leave a review. I read every single one of them. And it means a lot to see it. So it'd be really, really helpful for me if you could just leave a review for me to read out. And then I'll share it on the podcast as well. This review is from Ali Matron, who says, "Excellent, well-rounded podcast, 5 stars. Really glad I found this podcast. As a healthcare professional, I like to hear all sides of evidence and that it's to be analysed or explained. And today's devil's advocate was so interesting. Learning more and more, a stone down." Oh, fantastic. Well done, you. A stone down's a brilliant result. And I really like to see healthcare professionals who are open-minded to learning about this stuff. And it's clear that you're obviously following this in your own life as well. So that's going to really come through in your practice. So thank you so much for your review. Really appreciate it. And I appreciate you and everything you're doing for people who need help with regards to their metabolic health. Today, I'm talking with Amy and Jeff from Hunter and Gather. And I first met Jeff and Amy when I was at the 2018 Allergy Freeform show in Olympia in London with my wife, Besma. And we were only at the time, DGF was only, what, 3-4 months old? Very, very early days. We decided to go there very much last minute as well. And we kind of found Hunter and Gather there, and we thought, oh, you're a low-carb product, so are we. They're paleo. You know, in some ways, we're paleo too, although it depends on your definition, I guess. So we just got to know each other a little bit, and then we've met each other subsequently at other events. So we went there to the next year in 2019, the same show. Went to Real Food Rocks with them as well and got to know them quite well. And just, you know, Jeff sort of has given me quite a few podcast tips and advice about which shows to listen to. Amy is a real wizard when it comes to marketing, and she knows loads about that stuff. So They're a real power couple and really genuinely lovely people. So I was really pleased to get this podcast recording. And actually, we also were planning this for like weeks and weeks and weeks. I think the first date in the diary was like before June, maybe last year. So we've had kind of back and forth trying to get the dates right. And I'm so pleased that this is there. Now, I think as people who run, especially as couples who run their own low-carb companies and who've grown in a similar time frame, although in very different ways, it's been kind of nice to have that friendship. So I hope that you enjoy this as much as I did having the conversation. We discussed their story. We talked a bit about what paleo is, about choices in your food now and how to be empowered in your choice and informed. We talked about real food compared to fake food and how their whole philosophy ties completely into mine of having real food available for full nutrition. We talked also about how they've grown their community, the people who they, you know, communicate with daily, who buy their products, but also follow the same lifestyle alongside them. And it was just a really great recording. So I hope that all comes across as how much I enjoyed it. And I think they did too. So I'll hand you over in a moment to Amy and Jeff. But before I do, I just want to wish you all a very happy Easter, and I'll see you all very soon. Okay, guys, take care. And over now to Amy and Jeff. Hey, Jeff and Amy from Hunter and Gather have now joined me. Just want to give a bit of context for you, introduce yourselves. When we first started out with DGF, we were meeting at different shows and whatnot before lockdown and all the rest of it. And it's really exciting to now have you on the podcast to catch up properly. And, you know, from that little stand that I had with a little table and a few brownies, and now my business has grown, your business has grown. It's exciting times. So thank you so much for coming on UK Low Carb.
Thank you so much for having us, Dan. I remember that meeting. I think I met your partner at Allergy and Freeform Show. I think that was the first time. And you were doing a bit of a like keto meetup by your stand, if I remember correctly.
Oh, yes. Yeah, we were. Yeah.
So, no, I remember definitely. So it's been exciting to see how both our businesses have grown from that point. And we're excited to be here today.
Yeah, it's awesome to finally align calendars.
It's been crazy, isn't it? I think we started this in August and now it's March, almost April. So it's been a bit of a one. But the thing I just want to say about those shows, like back then I felt, and I don't know if you felt too, that we were kind of ahead of this movement. You know, it just seemed like there were some people doing keto and paleo. I think paleo is probably bigger than keto back then, potentially, but not much. And it's kind of growing and growing. And there seems to be, especially like January, as I'm sure you get the same thing, more people are becoming aware of this, which is really exciting. And those new people are listening to this and getting to know our brands, which is just amazing, really, to think about that transformation.
Yeah, there's a great deal more awareness now of keto. So, yeah, we obviously launched back in October 2017 and keto was hardly even talked about in the UK. I mean, paleo is known about, but yeah, it really wasn't. And I think we saw you guys in London in July 2019, I think the Allergy and Free From, and although
I think 2018 actually is the first one. We did both, didn't we?
Really?
Yeah, wow. It's 2018. I think we were both like, because we started in March 2018. We were then thinking to ourselves, we're not going to go to that show. It's really expensive. And then last minute, a deal came up where we thought, right, just go for it. And it was one of those stands where it's like, you know, a corridor outside a toilet in a little walkway with people walking straight past us to go to the Tesco stand to get free stuff. Then coming to us and saying, you got free stuff. It's like, I baked that myself at 2 a.m, mate. You know, give us a break. And I think you were just far around the corner and we were like, started chatting like, oh my God, there's somebody else in the same space as us. Amazing. Because it just wasn't that much. It was mostly gluten and vegan, wasn't it?
Pretty much.
Yeah, I think as well, like people were interested in our brand from the free from, and that's why we attended the show as well, because obviously I'm a lifelong celiac and there is a real transition, I think. So obviously I was gluten-free and then transitioned into paleo, dabbled with keto, and Hunter and Gather is obviously, we're not a purely keto or paleo brand. We're about looking at our ancestors, how they thrived, and we're providing the tools to thrive in a modern world, whether that's if you've got allergies, you're following keto, paleo, you're interested in refined sugar-free, grain-free, and general health and wellness. And I think the keto kind of halo is currently being viewed as a health halo as well, a bit like how gluten-free was back then. But it's very similar people, like people that have a need state, whether it's gluten-free, they're interested in keto or paleo, because normally if it's clean keto or you're following paleo, it's a grain-free lifestyle. So it works really well for that free from, and that's why we had such a great time at the free from shows as well. And we was attending.
And Real Food Rocks, you know, same sort of thing, isn't it? You know, people,
yeah, awesome.
You know, and I think this is the thing that you get, and I love this. It's that people want, they're more informed now than ever about their nutrition, about what they're putting in their bodies, but they don't have the choices. And actually, brands like ours, I think, are there to say, yes, you have got, you know, like we won't get into big brands in mayonnaise, for instance, or big brands in brownies and whatnot.
The big H.
You've got the, the big H. You've got that in the shop. You can go and get that stuff if you want. However, now with the internet, the way that we work as companies, you've got other options. And also, this is what I think is really special. You've got founders who actually follow it themselves and live it. And so it's only what they're prepared to eat themselves that they share. And I think that's superb. So yeah, I was so impressed when I first met you guys. And okay, we're having a big love in here. We better move on. But you know, I just think that's the thing. Like there is these boutique businesses coming through that are now like there for the micro niches like ours, I think are just really exciting. And it's, you know, it's happening all over the place and it's brilliant to see.
I definitely do remember now, 2018. I remember coming around and starting to be like, I think we only stumbled across you guys the last day. And I remember,
yeah, it was the last day. It's like everyone's packing away pretty much.
Yeah, literally. Then it was like, how did we go like 3 or 4 days without realizing there was?
Well, because we had zero time, didn't we? That's why. Like we were just like all of us on our stand working like mad. So yeah, the reason you don't remember is because you probably would have walked past us, seen our decorating table with a tablecloth, and assumed these guys are doing some maintenance work or something. And then it's like, oh no, actually, come around. You know, we're actually on the same page. So yeah, that was it. Yeah, we're just on that little corridor that year. It's exciting stuff.
I remember now.
But anyway, let's turn. I want to go back in time from that though, because you're a couple. Besma and I are a couple, although she's doing a PhD, so she's not here. And I want to find out about how you met and also, you know, what is your story? Because health, nutrition, is it something that you've always had individually? Is it something you've discovered together as a couple? And how does that kind of impact on your lives? So take it away.
Sure. So I'll start. So it kind of starts for me very early. So I was diagnosed celiac at 18 months old. And back then, there was no bold allergens on the back of the pack. I used to have to carry around something that I used to call Bible of foods that I could actually eat. So for my mum, there was no supermarket aisle back then for gluten-free either. So a bit like now how keto is becoming, and we're starting to get keto errors in shops. Back then, gluten-free didn't exist in the aisles, which is crazy to think about that now. So my mum was cooking from scratch, looking at a lot of alternatives because we wasn't buying replacement pastas, for example. So I have lived a very low grain, low carbohydrate lifestyle by default from that. And Jeff and I met as teenagers. So we actually met at an ice skating rink many moons ago. And Jeff, well, you was following more of a conventional...
Yeah, I was super lifestyle. Conventional Western lifestyle, you know, 5 Weetabix in the morning for breakfast or Shreddies with sugar on top. And if I felt I was being healthy that particular morning, maybe a banana as well and some honey. But yeah, real kind of typical ultra-processed grain-based diet, which, you know, pretty much the Eat Well guide is based around, or is the Eat Well plate back then. And I was quite a poorly kid and didn't realise. So I had severe eczema when I was a kid, severe asthma as a kid. Into my teen years, I developed quite bad cystic acne. And then really bad debilitating stomach aches. And no one could really put a kind of a finger on this. This was like in the mid-2000s. So you'd go to a doctor and they'd say, oh, it's growing pains, or it's just, you know, something you've eaten. And there was nothing definitive. So this was a long time before kind of the recognition of IBS and conditions such as like gluten intolerance rather than celiac. So having met Amy, I was like, oh wow, like there's actually a huge interaction between what you can eat, like wheat and gluten, for instance, and how it can make you feel. And that was kind of my first real insight into that interaction between human physiology and food. And I was only 16 at the time. And that was that. Went for the next couple of years coming around to Amy's with like around to Amy's house with my oats and my protein shakes as I was trying to put a muscle going to the gym, etc. And still had these like debilitating stomach aches whereby I'd be like holding wind for like 2 or 3 hours when I was around Amy's house. You know, as a young guy, you don't want to be like letting out flatulence when you're trying to court
Quarter. I just want to say now, I think men and women, men and men, women and women, we've all been in that situation, haven't we, where you're trying to do your best self. But if you've got a gut ache, that must be pretty uncomfortable.
Yeah, and it sounds like really quite funny when you look back, but there was one occurrence when I actually had to call myself an ambulance. And this was when...
What?
I was on a train.
Not from just holding in a fart.
Oh, right. I just thought, how much did that fart cost the NHS that you didn't go for 3 hours and then you had to call an ambulance? And also, was that your excuse to get out for a fart? Like, oh, Amy, I'm going to have to call an ambulance. I'm going to have to go. Then you get in the ambulance. Pull my finger.
I just didn't want to pay for the bus fare home.
Right, okay, yeah, the NHS taxi. Okay, fine.
All jokes aside, no, there was one particular evening I was on the way back from a job interview and I had this really, really, really bad stomach ache. I was on a train and I got off and I was literally debilitated from it. It sounds very like far-fetched, but it was really bad. Had to call an ambulance, got taken to hospital. They couldn't work out what it was. I was put on morphine overnight. And that was that. And the next morning, no one had any answers. We didn't know what it was, but we kind of pinpointed. I'd started to eat healthy malted wheat bread for the past 2 weeks. Right. And it was almost like an accumulation.
I can't get past
that. There's a mental image that everyone has listening to this right now, Jeff. And it's not a good one for you, my friend.
Sorry, guys. But no, so essentially the crux of it is people think that having a gut ache or excess wind is normal, right? So
I agree with you on that. Yeah.
Yeah. So I quickly realized, it wasn't quick, it was like 3 years, but I soon realized after a chance encounter with a Team GB physio, I was training for a marathon at the time, I'm not a Team GB athlete, by the way, guys, but this guy knew his stuff, right? And this was back in 2012. And he said to me, hey, Jeff, you don't need to be consuming all of these carbohydrates to fuel your training. And I was like, right. Of course you do. Like, you need carbohydrates for energy. That's just like basic physiology. Everyone knows that.
Yeah.
And he was like, no, you don't. Like, check out this video when you get home on YouTube by a guy called Gary Taubes, who your listeners may know of. And he's had some fantastic books.
Well, he was on the show about a month ago. I was talking to him. Yeah.
Yeah, awesome. So I went down a rabbit hole and I was in my final year at uni at the time doing a building surveying degree. And for some reason, it just captured my imagination about kind of low carbohydrate, paleo, grains, and human physiology in general. And it just captured my imagination. And that's when, kind of in 2012, we both looked at the paleo framework and a paleo template and started making changes. And I remember, like, I was so excited by it. I was like, dude, this makes so much sense. Yeah. Like, I've got this, when I eat now and I'm not eating grains or sugars, I was like, this overwhelming sense of energy is coming about me. It was a weird feeling, and that was not nearly, you know, what, 9-10 years ago now. But that was the start of the real kind of inquisitive nature around the food. I've rambled on there because the comment just really got
I threw you, didn't you? Sorry about that. Can I just also, let's go back to that, because when I started doing keto, I honestly thought I was going to break myself, because it's such a paradigm shift. We take it for granted now, don't we, that this is how 100%. We eat. I mean, I just completed a 2-day fast with the Wolf Pack, who listens to the show. Some people are still fasting today on their fifth day. And the first time I did fasting, I was like, oh my goodness. But before that, doing keto is a big step. So, you know, when you don't eat carbohydrate, there is definitely a battle that I had in my head of, but that's what I need to eat. So even though I've read the books, I've seen the evidence, I still believe I need to have this stuff. Did you have any of those things? Or do you think you're the sort of person who just thought, no, that's it, go straight into it and, you know, get results? And also, did you have keto flu or anything like that?
Yeah, so for me, like, because I was avoiding a lot of carbohydrate anyway and I knew how bad they would make me feel, and also because gluten-free allergens weren't readily available to view, even on like restaurant menus and stuff like that, there would be periods of time where I would have to go out and fast if I hadn't taken pre-made food.
Right.
So for me, like, that's just kind of normal. That was just normal, like, that my body could do that. And I wouldn't be overly hungry in those times.
Your food environment was very simple, essentially.
Yeah, so very simple. Yeah. Lack of choice, but that was a good thing because it was real foods, real good quality meats, vegetables, etc. And then, the intermittent fasting just happened by default on occasion.
Before it was trendy.
Before it was trendy, it was kind of just knowing that that was better for me than eating food that was going to be harmful. So that just was already in my brain of feeling that and knowing that. I think in terms of, we've been recently, we did a 28-day keto challenge in February. And as part of that, we were tracking our like blood glucose and ketone levels. And my blood glucose was always really good results. And I was in ketosis because Jeff and I don't follow keto all the time. We have principles from it and principles from paleo and primal and real food that we utilize. But by default, I was in ketosis anyway, because of utilizing fasting, because of avoiding refined sugars, grains, and seed oils.
Your metabolic flexibility is like second to none.
Yeah, and I think that's come from that. So for me, like, it's just been a real gradual journey. I don't know about you, Jeff.
I have vivid recollections of waking up back in 2013. I remember my room at uni, waking up in the morning thinking, oh, crikey, another day without sugar or sweetness. Like, I remember it was quite a traumatic experience. And I think that went on for at least 6 weeks.
Yeah.
But thinking back to then, there wasn't an abundance of information. There wasn't YouTube videos. There wasn't podcasts. Like, it was all unknown. It was all uncharted territory. Whereas now, so that was actually quite nice because there was an ignorance and naivety about it. Whereas now you can read, listen, watch, and maybe condition yourself to think there is a problem or there isn't a problem. So it was actually quite nice to go through that process. So yeah, it was a pretty rough journey to start off with. I was still like drinking orange juice. I didn't realize that was sugary. So it was a steep learning curve and a real paradigm shift for sure. But once I realized what the sugars, what the grains, what the inflammatory oils were doing to me, I was like, that's not even food anymore. Like, that is not even something, I can't even call it subsistence. That's just... it's stuff. I remember going into like the supermarket and looking at muffins and cakes and patisserie area, thinking that's not even food. Like, it just doesn't even, it's not even attractive to me. So there was a real shift there for sure. And I think that was maybe one of the nicer aspects of maybe back then when there weren't options, you just kind of just abandoned it. And there wasn't this kind of drip feed of, oh, should I, shouldn't I? It was simple. So yeah, I think back then, thinking it was quite nice.
So university is a tricky time as well, because, you know, there is the kind of, for a lot of us anyway, you can fall into bad habits, can't you? If you go out in the of an evening, it's very normal that people get the sort of, you know, they get hungry, they start eating bad foods. The burger vans aren't exactly there serving steak and radishes, are they? So, you know, you then tend to eat rubbish food and stuff. So that's quite impressive as at university you did that. Would you describe yourself as quite a disciplined person, Jeff?
Yeah, at the time, it was in my final year, so I was starting my dissertation, or I was going through a dissertation, and that actually helped. So without blowing my own trumpet, I actually finished my degree with the highest grade overall, and I put that down to like going paleo or low carb at the time, because I was able to sit for like 6, 7, 8 hours and just focus like unbelievably well, whereas prior to that, I needed food every 2 hours, or I'd be like really, really moody and grumpy. Like, Amy can testify to that. So I still, don't get me wrong, I still went out, but probably not that much, because the final year, it was all about focus. It was all about making sure I get a good grade so I can set myself up to get onto a good graduate scheme. So it kind of went hand in hand. I guess it helped. It gave me a purpose outside of the degree and I guess it went hand in hand. Being a disciplined person, I guess I am, in terms of it's all or nothing. Got quite an addictive personality as well. So it's good that I channel this enthusiasm, this kind of drive, this purpose into something positive, because it could quite easily become, or could have become, something negative.
That's powerful, isn't it? That's really making the choice. And I honestly believe that we are our habits. And I think what you've said there is you're the sort of people, well, Amy, you didn't have a choice in a way, but you're very lucky as a byproduct of your illness that you know, you are healthy because of it. But then you're making a good habit to choose to have the best nutrition, to feed your body properly, because you could still be celiac and eat rubbish, couldn't you, I guess, with seed oils and all the rest of it. You know, there is this kind of philosophy, I think, of, you know, a diet is healthy, But if you don't break down what you're eating in that diet, then of course it could be unhealthy. And keto is the same. You could have full rapeseed oil mayonnaise each day and think it's fine because it's full of fat. And obviously it doesn't work like that. So I tell you what, can we just break down then? Because you mentioned primal as well as paleo. And, you know, and I think probably listeners quite often will know about low carb. Some will know about keto. But paleo is something that I think is really interesting. And I just want to break down what sorts of food would be considered to be paleo. Or maybe it's better to say what foods would definitely not be considered paleo.
Yeah, for sure. So I almost envisage like a bit of a ladder or escalator or even a lift that you could move up and down between the levels. And you often find that you might come in if you're celiac and it's a gluten-free, and then you might go to paleo, and then you understand and learn about keto and try that, carnivore and primal in between. But a lot of people tend to move between different levels at any different time or goals in their life, for example. So for us, obviously, gluten-free was my starting point, then paleo, we've gone to keto, tried primal. So the basics of them, obviously, gluten-free is avoiding gluten, which is often in things like wheat, barley, oats are now, they used to be classed as a no-go food for in the celiac, but it's because of the processing rather than there being gluten in the actual oat grain. But that's the basis of that. Paleo is looking back ancestrally, and the core principles of that is that you would eat real foods, so vegetables, good quality meats. You wouldn't be concerned about tracking macros and things like that, but you would avoid any refined sugars, grains completely, so that's including like rice, corn, and also dairy
and legumes.
So dairy includes all dairy. There is some people that will do like sheep or goat, but for us that's more primal. So primal is very similar to paleo, but you can include some dairy as
well. And it's trademarked.
Oh, so it's actually, it's a brand then, is it? Like Primal?
Oh, yes.
Yep. So Primal Kitchen.
Have you just cost me 50 quid then? We have to pay? You know,
We're advertising.
They pay us. Yeah, okay. All right. Yeah.
And then obviously keto is, there's different, keto breaks down again, but the core and the true reason behind keto was that you would, it's a metabolic state. So it's a completely natural metabolic state that your body can utilize, and your ancestors would have utilized it in times of between hunts, for example, if there wasn't foods available for any period of time, because again, they wouldn't have had a supermarket just to pick their snacks up, etc. So it's a way that your body can provide energy to your brain and your body in the form of ketones rather than being fueled by glucose. Now, with obviously keto, the recommendation is less than 20 grams of carbs. You often see that, but some people can be in ketosis under 50 grams of carbs, for example, like me.
Even 100 grams, depending on your movement and your exercise.
But you'll generally see that as 20 grams. Now, that includes dairy, so cheese can be included. But if you're following what we call clean keto, then obviously refined sugars, seed oils, and avoidance of a lot of grains, it would come under clean keto. But there are some slight variations to that as well. But the main aim of keto is tracking your macros, understanding what you're eating so that you can get your carbohydrates to a low enough level so that your body switches from burning glucose to utilizing the ketones instead. So I think that's a snapshot.
Great. Yeah. Amazing. Can I just ask you a bit about paleo? Because this is why I'd love to learn more. So what carbs are in the paleo diet? So would, like, for instance, tubers and things and yams and stuff like that?
Yeah, for sure. So like sweet potatoes, tubers. So like there's different viewpoints, because again, we're looking back and making assumptions, aren't we, through history. And I think one of the main things that is great about paleo is that it removes processed foods. So like you're eating whole foods essentially. But sweet potatoes, yams, like tubers. I'm not sure if white potatoes recommended or not.
It's a bit like
it's
that.
A nightshade, isn't it? So
yeah.
There was one time where it's gone through evolutions and iterations over the past 20 years. Lauren Cordain was one of the founding fathers of the paleo movement, and they even advocated only eating lean meats, so not eating set like high fatty cuts of meat. So it was very lean based, and I think they've changed their kind of stance on that over the years. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's kind of can you kill it or can you dig it up from the ground? That sort of kind of
love
mentality.
That. It's a very simple food as it is, as nature's made it, not processed in a factory and churned out. Yeah.
For sure. So, and in our opinion, it's almost like people are on a spectrum of their metabolic health. So if you're really metabolically dysfunctional, then you probably do need to have a lower carbohydrate, more keto approach to resetting that metabolism and taking that approach. But then people that are more metabolically flexible or more metabolically healthy can probably thrive on a more paleo approach, which is a lot more kind of lenient, quote unquote. And advocates a lot more kind of diversity within your food choices, because I love keto. I think it's a fantastic metabolic state and a fantastic approach. But for a lot of people, it can also be quite restrictive, or they come from maybe Slimming World or Weight Watchers, and they're still tied into this mentality of tracking and looking at the numbers. And in my opinion, it doesn't need to be like that. We're proponents of intuitive eating. So being in touch with your body, within in touch with your ancestry, and understanding food is fuel, but also something that should be enjoyed and not stressed about. But I think people are on a journey to get to there.
Totally agree. You know what? I sometimes feel that, okay, this is where I kind of think I am, because I'm mostly carnivore, but you know, I am probably more keto than I am low carb, but I prefer to say low carb because I think it takes the pressure off. Whereas sometimes people talk about keto. I mean, okay, avoid this, please. And if you're listening to this and you're one of these people, I do apologize. But on Clubhouse, when you start hearing people talking about peeing on sticks, I'm like, too much information. You know, if you want to do it in your own life, fine. But I like obsessing with all that and the numbers. I think for me personally, that gets a little bit in the way. And then it becomes, you know, like you're tracking your numbers more than enjoying what you're eating. And that's just not right, is it? It's better to enjoy something that you know is going to have a good impact on your body, full of nutrition. And it's not going to, you know, make you have a sugar rush and the insulin releases and all the rest of it. I think the thing that I'm always a bit concerned about sometimes with something like paleo is something like, you know, evolution of human beings is fascinating, but actually the evolution of the food we eat is also interesting. And things like fruit, for instance, you know, if you go back to, like, for instance, apples, I don't know if you know where apples come from originally, they're from Russia. And so they've got the data to show that bears were eating apples in Russia and then migrating gradually towards Europe. And then they'd eat them in September to hibernate because of the sugar content. They'd hibernate for the winter. Then in spring, they'd kind of move further and further west because, of course, it'd be slightly warmer from Russia, certainly, and further south. And as they did, their droppings would be left behind. And then apples migrated to Britain. But if you go back to like 10,000 years ago, an apple was a fibrous little, like bigger than a berry, but it's mostly fiber, not so much sugar. Whereas nowadays, they're really like bred to a point where they are pure sugar bombs, aren't they? And I can imagine somebody doing a paleo diet in a very unhealthy way saying, well, I just eat mango. And you're like, well, okay, that's not exactly good for you. Just because it is a fruit, that's been shaped by mankind to be the sweetest it can be. So yeah, what do you think about that sort of thing with those sorts of foods and you know, and how we as humans have developed things? Because that's the other thing, of course, wheats and grains 10,000 years ago are totally different to now, aren't they? Even back then, you know, I wouldn't have said it's good to eat them necessarily, but you'd think nowadays wheat and everything is so big and overbred, etc. So, you know, what do you think about the way that food has evolved?
Yeah, so definitely when it comes to fruits, they have changed drastically in terms of like the sugar content, and they aren't the same as they would have been when we were gathering them.
So there's nuances for sure.
But
seasonal as well. You know, you wouldn't have had it in January. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and a lot of fruits and even things like honey would have been more summertime, and then wintertime, then you'd be more meat, for example. So,
and it even depends where you've like, where your ancestry is from, how like north or south or close to the equator. So there's so many nuances, and that's why us as a brand and what we do, we don't like to hang a hat on just one approach. We don't like to say, hey, we're a paleo brand, we're a keto brand.
Yeah,
it is all about the individual, and we know that's a cliche, but there is so much nuance involved, for sure. And so, yeah, we take learnings from paleo, but we don't say, hey, we're a paleo brand, or we advocate that for everyone.
But generally, when we do recipes, when it contains fruit, for example, we opt for berries because they're the lowest in sugars. They're suitable for paleo, keto. They kind of go across the range. So we'll often use berries instead of really high sugar fruits in recipes.
So to add to that, I'm not a big fan of fruit. I think it's one of the biggest misperceptions that, hey, I'm being healthy because I'm eating fruit. It's like, no, dude, you're just not eating chocolate and you're replacing it with fruit and you think that's a great thing to do. Like, okay, there's going to be some additional nutrients within that fruit, very minimal, but it's almost kind of a label or an identity that fruit is healthy when it's kind of really not.
We have a bugbear, especially when it comes to like products where they're kind of championing refined sugar-free. And actually, when you look at the recipe, they've not only replaced the sugar with fruit-based syrups, but they are potentially even higher in sugar than the refined sugar.
But it's natural.
But yes. It works the same way in your body, other than the fact of like, yes, there may be slightly more nutrients in it if it's a whole date that's being used versus refined sugar. But often it's date syrups. Yeah. And again, the impact on your kind of insulin and blood glucose levels, especially if you're putting more of that sugar in compared to the refined sugar. So that's a bit of a bugbear of ours, that a lot of marketing is going from refined sugar, just swapping it and potentially causing a bigger problem with fruit-based sugars instead.
There's a fantastic saying, treat dessert as poison and fruit as dessert. So
nice.
You know, it should be consumed in very small amounts on very small, like very rare occasions, essentially, not a staple. People get to 3 p.m. and get out the apples and the bananas. And it's like, yeah, but it's a healthy snack. It's like, no, but your body is telling you that you're currently going for a slump because of blood sugar roller coaster. And you're just substituting with fruit and paving over those cracks. So
yeah, I completely agree. And I think they take it almost like a medicine. Like, this is going to make me healthier, not this is healthy and it's not going to be as bad as something else. They're taking it as a medicine. Although, of course, I would say you can have keto brownies as a dessert, Jeff. So, you know, if you want to call an ambulance, get out of this awkward situation, I appreciate that. But
pulling my chain. No, but that's where products such as yours are amazing, because it's not a staple. Like, you're not saying to everyone, hey, you must have a brownie after every meal or every day. It is a moment of joy that you share with your friends and your family, your community. And that's what it should be. It shouldn't be a staple. But the problem with the modern food environment is that grains, sugars, inflammatory seed oils have become the staple. That is the default. That is a conventional wisdom.
And you mentioned and touched on kind of like the timeline and from paleo to now and how foods have changed. And we have got this diagram in one of our free ebooks on the website where it shows the timeline of kind of humans in existence and also when agriculture of grains came in and also seed oils. Like, we live in a little bit of a bubble of thinking how it's been since we were born is how it's potentially been for a long period of time. Like, obviously seed oils have been used for a long time, right? But actually, when you look at the full clock, it's like seconds versus the 24 hour of kind of our evolution as a species. And now there we've got a chart as well where it shows around 400 daily calories are coming from seed or vegetable oils in a normal
400 calories person, a day,
which 100 years ago it would have been almost zero.
Yeah.
So this is a sudden influx, and rapeseed oil is also known as canola oil in the States. And you often see a lot of marketing of canola oil free, but people in the UK don't realize that is rapeseed.
Yeah.
And rapeseed oil was actually originally used as an engine lubricant. And it was toxic. Like if you was to eat it, it was acutely toxic. And it's only through breeding and changing of that strain have we made it not acutely toxic. But our question is it chronically toxic? So yes, it won't kill you instantly, but what's it doing over the long time? And this is all within the last sort of 100 years that this is all going on. So it's a bit scary.
And we've got some fantastic data in that ebook actually that shows the consumption of animal products has kind of gone down since the 1970s and the 1980s. Sugar's kind of gone down a little bit in the last kind of 10 or 15 years. Grains have kind of stayed where they are, but seed oils have kind of exponentially risen.
Right.
And it correlates, again, it's only correlation, not causation, but it correlates wonderfully well with the rising chronic disease and obesity and cancer and that sort of stuff. So I guess 8 years ago, I thought that sugar and carbohydrate was like the main thing that's causing kind of metabolic dysfunction. But over the past kind of 3, 4, 5 years, I've come to realize that in fact, I think those seed oils are kind of the hammer that's driving the nails into the coffin, so to speak. Yeah, so it's an interesting one for people to be aware of. And we see it a lot in the keto community where they're still consuming the big HMO and they're consuming rape seeds and sunflower oils that are extracted with solvents and hexanes, and they're just totally unaware. It's a big misperception. Not sure where I've gone with that one.
You know what, though? This is what Graham Phillips said to me just this week. We're recording a series at the moment. I don't know if you know Graham Phillips, the pharmacist who gave up drugs. And he said, actually, it's the seed oils, which is actually the underlying issue initially. The sugar came later, but actually the seed oils is the biggest problem that we have to solve. And he's described it in the terms of, you know, with the, is it the dual bonds that you get in polyunsaturated fat compared to the single bonds or vice versa? And he said how effectively the oxidization of your body inside is like rusting in an engine. And if that happened in an engine, then you know that in 10 years, the engine's going to be in massive trouble, if even that long. But we're having the same thing. And I think the chronic element is really important there. I think we now have this idea that it's normal to kind of have things like diabetes in your 50s or 60s, almost like it's an age-related by itself factor.
Exactly. Yeah.
Rather than realizing actually there's damage being done in your teens, 20s, well, childhood as well, actually, that's causing that in your 50s and 60s. That's where you see it. And I think, you know, if you just reverse that and think, actually, you could be an incredibly healthy 50, 60-year-old that doesn't have those conditions. It's not because your age that's caused it. It's because the amount of time you've been having these things going into your body. So I think it's really important. And I think, you know, the seed oil thing has got to be tackled, because it will be, you know, it's going to happen. 50 years, I'll look back and say, oh, my goodness, can you believe what they were eating back then? It's like saying they processed crude oil to make it edible and they thought that would be fine for them. You know, what are they, mad? I think you're so right on that one. And the canola oil thing was very clever marketing. Wasn't it actually a submarine company originally that used it in their engines? And then they sold it to another company to try and use in their machines. And then eventually they thought we could make more money from food. But like you say, it was never, ever seen as a food initially. It was marketed that way. And it was kind of developed to be a food. But it's a fake food. It's not food at all, is it?
Yeah, the same with cottonseed and soybean, all that, yeah.
Yeah. It's good. And interesting how you mentioned about diabetes there as well. Just another little anecdote. My grandparents are in their 80s and they was diagnosed with type 2 diabetes. And although we've gone through obviously our own journey at Hunter and Gather, bringing your loved ones on board as well can be challenging, because you don't want to come across preachy
just a bit, all these
kinds of things. But I sat down with my nan and granddad and gave them time to understand about seed oils for one big factor, carbohydrates for another. They didn't realise that toast was sugar, basically. They thought it was healthy. And the long and short of it is, they actually reversed their type 2 diabetes and came off
superb
all medication within 3 to 4 months.
Put it into remission.
Wow.
Put it into remission.
That's
amazing, so they're both off all metformin and other medication. And they did that in their 80s. So it goes to show that you can kind of come back from that as well. I think people think that if they get type 2 diabetes, that's it. now for life, and you take your medication, but you can take control. So if you're sitting here thinking, oh God, I'm in my 50s, 60s already, and I'm already on that path, you can kind of put it into remission.
And it's scary because like we do exist within an echo chamber, right? So we exist within this silo of information where we just take for granted that, of course, everyone knows that you can put type two diabetes into remission.
I know exactly this. Yeah.
You think that everyone's aware of that, but they're not. Like Amy had to negotiate with her grandparents' doctor to say, hey, like, can we get some more blood tests? Because we're kind of putting in this low carb protocol and we believe that these medications aren't going to be needed. So we need to adjust them. And they was like, what do you mean? Like, of course.
Yeah.
Why do you need a blood test for? And then they had no they didn't recognize that low carb, and this was a doctor, could have that effect.
Yeah. So it's shocking. I know what you mean. It's like when you see somebody who is scraping the butter off their toast to make it healthier, and you're going, oh, okay. I realize we've got different paradigms and you shouldn't take for granted, because you're right. On social media and, you know, through friends and family, when you talk about these things, it becomes common knowledge. But actually you meet somebody else who's outside the paradigm and you realize how strong it is and how it's there. And actually it's all about caloric deficit, isn't it? That's the way that most people think about health, rather than actually what's the food they're eating. And I find that bizarre, but actually that's the battle that we're fighting in a way, isn't it? So let's bring this to hunter and gather. So how did that all come about? Who had the idea? Tell me the conversation. Who said it first? Who suggested this? Or was it that you were actually making mayonnaise initially at home and then you thought this needs to be put out there to the world?
Yeah, so Jeff's the entrepreneur and I am generally the doer.
What an amazing combination that is, because you know what? Just for people who aren't like maybe business savvy or not so aware of business, there is always that combination, isn't there, between the operation, the actually having an efficient operation that means that things work, and then the person who's seen the opportunities and where they can market things and who's going to need this and how they're going to get it to them. And if you've got just one person, it doesn't work. You need to have those two different minds working in that way so that you can have the sales to chuck towards the operation and the operation is meeting what the person's going out to get the business is doing. That's perfect. Great. I love that.
Yeah, it definitely helps. But it means I'm like the barrier to ideas, whether I think they're good, not, or, and I do put a bit of pressure back on Jeff to make sure that he's really thought through what he's doing. So there, obviously we was going on this health journey, and at the same time I was working in the pet food industry. So I'd actually worked for one of the big corporates that does human food corporate as well as pet food corporate.
Human food-like substances.
Yes, and learn a lot about nice. What goes into the foods and how the people in that company didn't know much about what was going on and stuff like that. So I definitely had a corporate view at that point, and it really wasn't sitting very well with me, even from a pet food perspective.
Yeah.
So I moved to a grain-free pet food company that was a startup, and I learned loads about starting the business from that company. I worked with them for a few years, different job roles, understood about bringing out new products, marketing, sales, and a whole host of things. And at the same time, Jeff, you were kind of going on your own work journey from, I know you mentioned his graduate role. I don't know if you want to cover a bit of that quickly.
Yeah, for sure. I progressed from uni. Obviously, I'd been captivated by low carb, paleo, and how good I actually felt and how much it, you know, I've always been a slim guy. I never had massive issues, but obviously them chronic issues that I mentioned back at the start. So when I felt good, when I realized this cloud had lifted, I was like, I want as many people as possible to feel like this. Typical millennial, I wanted to change the world, right? And
you are, to be fair.
I didn't know how to express that. So I went into I went into a graduate scheme as a quantity surveyor. So I worked in quantity surveying in the construction industry for 3 years. But during that whole time, I was obsessed by health, movement, food, and what was going on. And I just wanted to work within that space. And it was like something I just couldn't, like I couldn't get past. It just felt it's that when you had that feeling, you know what it feels like, but it just feels like you're waking up every day and you shouldn't be doing what you're doing and you should be doing something else.
Yeah.
So I started to explore being like a nutritional therapist or a blogger or a personal trainer, even graduate entry medicine. But I realized that if I went into that, I would still be sucked into a conventional wisdom paradigm and wouldn't be able to express what I'd learned.
And I think we both really thought that this space needed more movement behind it. And it was definitely the right thing for the nation to get behind something about real food. And it, from my aspect of like lack of transparency of businesses from an allergy perspective, and then also the health perspective and the journey we'd been on. And we was looking at it and Jeff was going through this kind of internal turmoil as to where to direct his attention, where it'd be best. And we was thinking about it. It was like, there's some great people out there already. There's like Gary, who we mentioned, there was like Rob Wolf. There's just, there was a whole host of content providers. There was doctors, there was functional health practitioners that were kind of driving this message already. Yet there was no one really in the UK driving it from a product perspective. And I knew from my experience that actually product businesses are the one that educate, provide category direction for the major food buyers in this country. So they're not going to be listening to the likes of Gary Taubes, who's providing content and education. They're going to be listening to the brands that are coming to them with these products and marketing plans and things like that.
It's where people spend their pounds, right? Or their dollars.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. You're also bringing an audience. You're saying, look, we could build up this customer base that you aren't actually helping at the moment, and it's growing. And look, we come with our own market. You know, that's the way it works, isn't it?
From a buyer's perspective, the way that supermarket buyer, yeah. So from a retail perspective, they've got their own targets of what they're working to. And yeah. One of them is incremental sales. So it's sales that are new that they're missing out on. So for example, the whole keto paleo community that want a mayonnaise product, currently, there or when we launched, there was no product suitable for them in the entire supermarket or shop. So by providing a product with the messaging and the education behind it, the support of other people in the space, we was enabling those shoppers to follow that lifestyle, make a switch. And that also resonated with the buyers because we're providing new people that they've missed out on from shopping in their shop, and they're all making mayo at home, for example, instead.
But yeah, it's important to point out that like Amy also had this desire to, you had this kind of burning desire to also help people through your journey because yeah.
I always felt that I had something to give in the gluten-free, celiac, and it has evolved even into like paleo and keto and genetics, because we've gone down rabbit holes of learning about DNA and stuff like that and how that impacts people. So I also had that desire, and Jeff had this strong desire as well. And I was like, do you know what, Jeff? Actually, product-based, I can support with from my skills in my job role. I'm now at a startup company that is very flexible and supportive of us launching our own business. Like, why don't we try this together? And we thought, to be honest, it was going to be a side business that potentially would grow to a stage that could support Jeff, and I just gave extra.
How many stories start like that, by the way? BGF is exactly the same. It's a side hustle that I'll do when I'm teaching during the day, and you know, and then next thing you know, you're like, whoa, this is bigger than I thought it would be. Yeah
exactly. And we've always kept with delivering like education content, and we do a lot of articles, we do a lot of lives, chats, and that's all to keep delivering on that education piece.
I guess you could say that our products are merely the vehicle for the message and the education.
Yeah,
we saw that as like the conduit or the vehicle to be able to deliver this message and almost be a protest on shelf next to the other crap.
Yeah.
that's not food. This is food. So that's kind of, that's, we're leveraging that as much as possible.
And it's really exciting because if you think like we're the category lead in Whole Foods market, so we are the best selling condiment in the entire company, which is amazing because people are looking at the avocado mayo, they're picking it up, they're learning, and they're looking at other aspects of their life. And Ocado, just a cheeky plug, we've been nominated as a rising star at Ocado supermarket. And again, that's really great because it shows that actually the customers are wanting these options. There is a need for it. And we're hoping that over time, we're going to be able to compete on the big store supermarket shelves and get people to question, like, why has that product got chemical EDTA in it? What is EDTA when you don't need it because this one doesn't? Or why does this have sugar when actually I can have this option? Or why would they use 100% avocado oil? These are the questions we want people to ask. And it's starting, definitely.
It stimulates conversation. Yeah. But it's not without its challenges, that's for sure.
Yeah,
that's the thing. I mean, because the problem I think in retail quite often is people try to compete on price alone. You're competing on quality. And that's always hard because the price tag could then be higher because of the quality. And you're trying to educate people. So I guess there's always that battle between the niche that we are in, but actually educating the masses at the same time to realize what they should spend on food. And there's a big problem we all face where people are being paying probably less than they should have done for their food. But then that's meant the quality of the food has been less as well. So, you know, in America in the 70s, forget his name, is it Butts, was the food secretary or whatever the title was, appointed by Nixon. And he basically said he wanted to make profit the main thing in the food industry. Profit, profit, profit. But of course, that means that the margins got, you know, like bigger, but the actual cost to make it went down, the quality went down. And it's all about the profit for the big company, not what you're putting in your mouth. And that's a hard paradigm to fight against, isn't it? To say, this looks the same because we make it look the same, but actually this is food and this is rubbish and this is more expensive and this is rubbish and it's cheaper because it's rubbish. That's always tricky, isn't it, I think, to come over that.
It's a huge challenge, not only for the end consumer or the customer, but also when you are speaking to the retailers. So it's taken us 3.5 years to build up that body of credibility whereby they'll now entertain conversations. Because when a product is 3, 4, 5, 6 times more expensive, the retailer who has got a certain amount of ignorance and naivety or just ignorance doesn't know.
It's more of a risk profile as well. They're worried that it will sit on the shelf and that won't sell. And therefore you've got to provide a lot of evidence to support why it will sell. And then from a customer perspective, I think that varies. Like, it depends on who you are as a shopper. Because there are some shoppers that always want the most expensive item because it's perceived quality as well. So there's a real balance and mix between different things. I think definitely question, like, why is food so cheap? And if you look at like another jar of mayo, for example, like, that shouldn't be under £1. Like, how it can be made, shipped, the quality of the ingredients.
And their profit margins would be way bigger than yours as well. That's the thing as well. It's cheaper with a massive margin on it because it is so cheap to make. And yet yours is more expensive to make. It'll be more expensive a product, but you're making it because you just know it's better for people. And but people don't know that though, do they? That's the thing. It's hard. So it's good to get that message out there.
Because rapeseed oil, for example, or seed oils are 15 times cheaper than avocado oil.
Or even olive oil.
Yeah, our product isn't 15 times more expensive. It's in between, but it's that quality. And I've seen it before on social media where it comparing like wine, and the first X amount goes into the cost of the bottle, the label, the marketing, and actually this, if you go slightly more expensive, the quality comes in the ingredients and the quality of the wine itself. That can be the same across mayo. And I don't think that the current label guidelines help as well, because if you look at a lot of mayonnaise in the supermarket, it will say British free range eggs or free range eggs. And actually, we know, because as being in the manufacturer and looking into all this information, that could be powdered eggs with undeclared flow agents.
And you telling me this in 2018, and you said how you had a massive issue, I think, at the time using actual egg in a product. And I was like, actual egg and mayonnaise, like that seems so not controversial to me. That's weird. And you said no, because the eggs that you actually get in the mayonnaise is not what you think. You know, you think about somebody literally with an egg and vinegar and oil making it for you, but it's not. And so just tell me about this powdered stuff then. So what is, how's that used, and how is it different in your mayonnaise?
Yeah, so we only use British free-range liquid eggs from St. New Farms. They're right down in Cornwall. And obviously, logistically, getting fresh egg and then making a product quickly causes more of a logistical challenge than if you've got buckets full of powdered egg that can sit on a shelf for a very long time.
Yeah.
Now, yeah, yeah. So you could just have it on
Five
the shelf.
Years.
They
wow.
could make the mayo at any time of the powdered egg, and they don't need to declare it on the label. And now, because of it being a powder, to stop it clumping together, there's these flow agents added.
Sodium dioxide.
Yeah, so chemical flow agents that do not have to be put on the label, and you will not see them on the label.
And hey, like, that may not be bad for you, but you're wow. not declaring on a label what's yeah, actually in there.
Yeah, so it's not like for like, though, is it?
And what's the nutrient quality of that yeah. powdered egg that's been sat on the shelf for X number of years versus free-range British eggs that are fresh from the farms that's being made into a product straight away? These are things that we're competing against. That's not fair when it comes to a label, because it says free range egg and we're free range egg. You can't decipher
yeah.
that.
You know what? I just suddenly realized there's a sequence here, isn't there, for our companies? And I think they're in the same space. We have both started from nutrition first, then we go to flavor, then we go to texture. Whereas they're going flavor, texture, job done. And that's it. Nutrition doesn't feature, does it? As long as it's got a nice flavor and texture in your mouth, job's done. You put it on your plate, that's the mayonnaise done, whatever it might be, a sausage or whatever it is, there you go, enjoy it. But we start for nutrition first, and if that's right, then you now have to make it taste good. Now you have to make the texture right, but keep the nutrition as the number one focus.
I think it's even more than nutrition, it's the quality of the ingredients for us
yeah.
and for the and nutrient density, because there are brands that focus on nutrition, but with a will utilize chemicals to take out calories, take
oh,
out
right,
sugar.
Yeah. I certainly didn't mean that.
No, yeah, so I just yeah, wanted to clear yeah. that up, because yeah, some brands right. do focus on nutrition for an aspect of trying to make this basically as if you're drinking water, but with flavor, and there's actually no nutrient density
yes,
in that yeah. product.
Yeah.
Also cost engineering as well. There's a lot of brands that will focus on how can they bring out products that improve their margin and where can they cut corners on. Another one, salt. Like salt you see on a label, and we use pink Himalayan salt. So there's no
So way more
additives.
Expensive than just, yeah.
Yeah, whereas normal salt, again, has anti-caking agents undeclared. So you'll see yeah. salt on a label, you won't see the chemical anti-caking agents.
Typically speaking, anyway, unless it's yeah. over a certain amount and they do have to declare. But yeah, what we're trying to drive home here is that those things that are underneath under a certain percentage, you don't need to declare. And even down to how oils are extracted, is it just a physical process? Or are we using solvents and hexanes?
Yeah, the bath method to try and bring them out. Yeah, horrific,
yeah.
isn't it?
Is your MCT oil that you're using, has that got a rapeseed glycerol that's used in its production? A lot of it does.
Oh, really?
We found that out when we were looking
didn't
into production
know that.
Methods. So we'll never use anything that's got seed oils. But
jeez.
This, yeah, it really is a minefield, and it is crazy. And there's so many kind of smoke and mirrors within the food industry, as you well know.
Yeah, yeah.
That you think, crikey, I could write a book about this one day.
You should write a book. We need to, you know what? How can we as consumers know this stuff? It's because you're in the industry. You know, I know our business is quite different that way, but you're seeing it up close and realizing, hang on a minute, the standards here are so poor for some brands. And it is shocking. It really is. I mean, the fact that, you know, like Tic Tacs apparently are sugar-free because they fall within a certain bracket, which means they don't declare their sugar content, but they're wow. just purely sugar. So if you had, you know, like 100 grams of Tic Tacs, you're just eating 100 grams of sugar, but they're officially declared sugar-free because they're less than a gram each or whatever. So, you know, it's just, yeah. it's statistics are twisted, and, you know, it's really wrong, isn't it?
And just picking up on another ingredient that just reminded me, that's often in mayonnaise, you find something called EDTA in the big H's. EDTA is a preservative, a chemical preservative. What it does actually, it's utilised in the medical industry to strip iron, copper, metals, basically, from your blood. And wow. It's used, it is safe to be in foods, but they recommend a total of, I think it's 3 grams a day. And because of the typical serving size of what is recommended for mayonnaise. Now, I know some people that eat mayonnaise like you could have a bathtub of it a week. And I don't think that's been shared about that either, because if you're anemic or you don't really want to be stripping out iron, copper from your blood, this is what is in conventional mayo.
And you're eating it every day. Not even thinking of it as like anything special, just on the side of your plate. That's awesome. So I just want to kind of come onto your life in a moment. But before I do, can you tell us about your other products as well? Because mayonnaise is where it started, but you now have, I see the collagen behind you there, which I've got some of that at home, actually. I have that each morning in my box I get sent each month. So what other things do you have at the moment as well?
Yeah, so as the name suggests, we're very ancestrally inspired. And part of that is obviously the no refined sugars, the no grains, the no inflammatory oils, but also supporting nose-to-tail nutrition and utilising all of the animal for nutrient density. And we believe that's key for optimal health. So we have a range of conventional products that are in a lot of households, like the condiments, so mayos, ketchups, they're own over 95.
We've got your ketchup as well. Yeah, that's very nice. My daughter loves that.
Oh, nice. Yeah, it's a real like family favorite, and I think over 95% of households have some form of condiment, so mayo, ketchup, for example. So this is a great place for us to make a big impact straight away and drive education. So we have a range of condiments. So the ketchups, they're all unsweetened, organic tomatoes.
And barbecue sauce.
Barbecue sauce, nice. Spicy one. We do lots of different mayos. We do avocado oils. But then we also have a supplement side of the business, because we, like I said, utilising the nose-to-tail nutrition is key, and avoiding, in a lot of supplements, there's a lot of bulkers, fillers, grains, sugars. So we have some collagen peptides, which supports skin, hair, nails, bones, joints, really good protein source as well. And then we have organ supplements, which if you're following a paleo, carnivore, even keto lifestyle, incorporating organ meats into your lifestyle is recommended. But for many, especially in the Western world, it's something that can be a bit squeamish. I really struggle with eating things like heart, for example. But I understand the nutrition, and I understand that eating nose to tail is better for the environment, better for you. So we freeze dry the organ meats and pop them in a gelatin capsule so that you can take them easy without the taste. And then natural vitamins and minerals. Liver's one of the most nutritional powerhouse cuts or offal.
Nutrient dense, yeah.
And so there's vitamin B12, iron, copper, riboflavin. So again, we're going back to, we want those. We want iron in our blood, for example. So we just, we've got a vast range now. It's grown drastically, but
it's exciting stuff. And then in the future, any big plans on the horizon and that you can talk about, or is it all top secret?
When is this going out? What sort of day?
Friday, next week.
Okay. So
early April.
If everyone keeps their eyes peeled in the next 4 weeks, we're going to have some new exciting products launching in May. Great. So can't say much more other than we're definitely going to get dressed up for the occasion.
Excellent. Okay, there you go. So you heard it here first, and keep your eyes peeled for that. So and what's the best place, I suppose, your website? What's your website we can go and check out this stuff?
So it's hunterandgatherfoods.com. also we're obviously on Instagram at hunter gather uk, and Facebook. We've also got a Facebook group, so if you just want to come and have a general chat, there's some incredible educated people in there that it's just a real great tribe to join in with. So you get first glimpse of stuff in there as well. So if you want to know, first of all, get in the Facebook group.
Get in the Facebook group. Brilliant. So before we end today, and it's been I've really enjoyed this conversation. Thank you for your time, guys. It's been, I've learned so much. So I wanted to just kind of come back to kind of, what is your daily routine? Because actually, before this call, we're talking about things like sleep as a big part of health. It's not just nutrition, is it? It's about your lifestyle as well. And when we reflect on that, is there any kind of top tip that you think you'd get tell to a listener that they could maybe do for a real quick win in their health generally that you do at the moment?
Spend as much time outdoors as possible. So, that's so important for our circadian rhythm. People think we're overexposed to light in the evenings, but I think we're underexposed to daylight in the daytime. Yeah. So I think that is a key one, and something we even struggle with, because having a business and having a mission that we're trying to push forward to impact as many people's lives as possible, it takes its toll. So there is certainly a trade-off there and a compromise. But I think having routine around sleep, sleep is key. We were just chatting before how I didn't realize that in society there was still this bravado about having 2, 3, or 4 hours worth of sleep a night. But to me, that's crazy. That's just sabotage. That's the equivalent of drinking petrol, in my opinion. Prioritize sleep. Try to have your bedroom nice and cool, below 20 degrees. That's a real key one. We even sleep with separate duvets because it stops. So Amy likes to be a bit warmer. I like to be a bit cooler. You're not interrupting each other with obviously tossing and turning with a duvet. So that's kind of a top tip that we like to share. There's so many things, right? I mean, just walking on grass with bare feet, for instance, this is what we would have done. Us as humans, there's so many behaviors that we've forgotten about.
Yeah.
Generational wisdom has been lost essentially. And we've all been bombarded by marketing from the big corpse over the last 20 or 30 years.
I so agree with that. I now go for a daily walk, and it is the best time of day for me because what I find incredible is it's the time when my brain is buzzing the most with ideas, because I just take my earphones out, I just walk, just me, and my brain's got a chance to be outside with a bit of cool air, and you just think, why don't I do this more often? I love it so much. And this is what we all do. We all tend to work in these little boxes of rooms. We're focused at a screen all day long. We're not moving our legs very much. We kind of get up and we're a bit stiff because we've been sat there too long. Then we eat our kind of rubbish food. And you think, well, no wonder so many people are ill. Just get out and just enjoy this world that we have. And, and that is the paleo way. And, I totally agree with you on that, Jeff. I think that's really inspirational. So thank you. So where's the best place to connect with you both? Instagram, Facebook, as we talked about the website, but where are you on the social media spectrum? Whereabouts can they find you?
Yeah, definitely. Instagram is really good. Obviously, Facebook group, if you want more of a behind the scenes look, not so glossy version.
What does that mean? I love that idea. It's like you come out, your hair all over the place in the morning. Hi, guys. I hope you're well.
posing pictures. No, it's more like real life in the Facebook group, and you get a lot of people asking lots of different questions or guiding each
Instagram
other.
Isn't real life.
Instagram is very
right polished. I've seen you posing, Jeff, with your little pout. What are you talking about? No, I haven't really. But I know what you mean. Instagram can be a little bit polished, whereas actually I like reality. Yeah
That Facebook group's amazing. I mean, there's 1400 people. I only started, didn't it, 2 months ago.
We started in January.
Some great conversations, people from a paleo perspective, low carb, carnivore. So you spoke about carnivore earlier. I just want to add that when I've been carnivore in the past, that's when I feel the best. But it's tricky to do all the time. So I think it's a great approach. A lot of carnivores in that group.
We felt that there was a lot of groups on Facebook that were either specifically paleo, specifically keto, or specifically carnivore, or gluten-free or health focused, but there wasn't a place that you could explore your ideas between and flex between. It was like, if you're no longer keto, you're not our friend kind of
situation.
Yeah,
I know what you mean, yeah.
So we wanted a group that could explain and expand thoughts and ideas across all of them, because we feel like it's a ladder and you can go in between.
Ancestrally consistent.
Yeah, we just have some core rules and principles that we stick by, such as the grains, the sugars, the seed oils. And it's been really good. A lot of people have like expanded their mind. And in social media now, obviously, a lot of the time you're being put in certain buckets and you're only shown content that backs your existing ideas. So we're trying to, with the group, expand people's ideas in different directions so that they can work out what's right for them. And that's been really interesting and really good to see, because it's not a one size fits all always. And we're always learning. Every day's a school day. We're always learning, developing, improving. And so if you're that kind of person, you want to learn more, you want to investigate and you want to see behind the scenes a bit more, then head on to our Facebook group. If you just like recipes, pretty pictures and some good content, Instagram's your best bet. Our website has loads of articles and free recipes as well. So whatever platform works best for you, you can find us on. I think we're going to be doing a bit of TikTok at some point.
Oh, I'm going on TikTok. Yeah, I've been doing that like last week or two, and it's like I'm so out of... I'm not that generation at all, but I'm having a go anyway. Do it. It'd be great. And reels are new to me, but I'm trying those. Ugh. It's sort of thing. My daughter's all, she's only five. She's already embarrassed. You know, what's going to be like? She's 15. I don't know. But at the moment she looks at me like, what are you doing, daddy? I'm like, just leave it.
As you dancing in the background.
Yeah. What are you doing over there? I'm doing a transition video. I'm putting sunglasses. Anyway. So yeah, so it's great.
Can I just add there on the social media front? Because I would prefer that people weren't on social media. Like, I would advocate, hey, take some time away from your phone. And we always, randomly, we do put one up on Instagram saying, like, do anything but look at your phone. Because we really do think that's kind of so ingrained now within our society that it's taken away those moments of contemplation. It's taken away those moments where you just kind of sit, think and wonder. And
I think, why is everything input? You know, it's actually important to let your brain just ruminate and reflect, isn't it? And yet we don't. That's what I'm talking about my walk. You know, I'm just in input mode or output mode all the time. Just actually just being in a state of calm and tranquility just doesn't happen enough, does it, in society?
Yeah. So guys, after listening to this podcast, turn it off and go for a walk for an hour and try to treat your solitude deprivation, because we're so deprived now of solitude that so much input and so much connectivity.
Do you know what I would love as well that we've not had yet? A handwritten letter. If someone wants to speak to us and send us a handwritten letter.
Oh, she's demanding. All right, I'll write your hand. Not from you, Dan. I've got a lot on, but okay. You want a podcast, a handwritten letter? I mean,
you sure
right.
We haven't had a letter?
We haven't had a handwritten letter.
No, we love speaking to people when they call up.
Yeah. If you put a wax stamp on it, bonus points.
Okay, there's points to be had here too. I love that. Excellent.
No,
I know what you mean though. Like Christmas cards and stuff, you don't get so much. But I used to love the fact that it was personally written. It just means a lot. Whereas an e-Christmas card, I'm like, okay, it's a bit weird. But, you know, thank you for the message. But then on saying that, a personalised thing is so important, isn't it? I agree with you on that completely. Well, you know what? I've loved that conversation today. There's a lot there that we can actually take into our lives generally. And I think as well, you know, you've got that kind of level of detail that it sounds to me, I hope I'm not wrong, that you're perfectionist about what you do. And that really comes across, that you care, you've got real passion and drive, and you've got values and standards in everything you do. And it doesn't matter if you're making food or anything else, that standard is coming through very clearly. So yeah, it's exciting. And I really wish you all the best for the next few years and look forward to what comes out in May and your outfits, whatever they might be.
Thank you so much. We really enjoyed the chat.
Yeah, thanks, Dan. It's been great. Thanks for having us on, and keep up the great work.
Cheers, mate. Okay, take care both then, and see you soon. Bye.
Yeah, bye.
Hello, you still there? Dan here. I can see you're one of the keen ones because you're still listening. So, got a very simple request. Please go and rate and review this podcast now on Apple if you haven't done so already. And I'll read it out next week on the show. So go and do that. Hear about your review next week. Everyone's a winner. Right, I'm going to shoot off now. Take care. Have a lovely week. See you next Friday.